The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Tuesday, February 12th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. All sorts of great stuff we've got on today's episode of the show, number 141, so we hope you'll stick with us. We have got the drug czar, Gil Kerlikowske, spoke to McLean's magazine up there in Canada, had all sorts of interesting quotes. We're going to get to that in our Behind the Headlines segment today. We've also got our 420 news, where we've got news on marijuana legalization and decriminalization from Arizona and New Jersey and Indiana and California and North Carolina as well. So make sure you catch that. We've got a very special guest calling into today's show, Jay Selthoffner. He's an activist in Wisconsin, and they've got some rallies going on in Wisconsin. He wanted to call in and talk a little bit about that. We'll also ask him about the escalation of the border patrol up there in the northern border of Canada. Of course, Wisconsin's got a border there, so we'll ask him about that as well as we get to our cannabis community chat halfway through the show. Also on today's show, time for a radical rant. I took some time to write up the top five new, kinder, gentler drug warrior talking points. I was kind of inspired by Gil Kerlikowske because he spouted off a couple of Sabbath-isms, and I put those together with a couple of Kevin's own whimsical retorts, and we've put that together in a five-piece article that we're going to get to you here at the Radical Rant at 45 Paths. So the latest, kindest, gentler drug warrior talking points debunked for your listening pleasure. Also, today is Electric Tuesday for our Daily Toker Tunes. We'll take a dip into the electronic music genre for today, so stick around for that. And then in Toker Talk Radio, a very interesting story that we're going to get to in hour two about a marijuana delivery company in Colorado trying to take advantage of the legality in Amendment 64. They thought they were operating legally in a gray area. Maybe that area wasn't so gray, at least as far as the police are concerned. We'll check that out in hour two, and we'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. All sorts of interesting things going on, including we've got the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. We'll have no live shows on Thursday and Friday, so stay tuned for repeats at those regularly scheduled times. We'll be back with the news right after this.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. California is the center of marijuana consciousness. That's why High Times Magazine is returning to the Golden State for our second High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Los Angeles. That's right. Come to LA Center Studios on February 16th and 17th for this high-flying event. Meet the medical cannabis industry, visit our extra special medicating area, and sample the best cannabis products of Southern California. There'll be cultivation seminars and presentations about getting pot legalized, not just in California, but everywhere. Be there on Saturday evening when we host a Rock'em Sock'em concert with surprise musical guests. And don't forget Sunday night and the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup Awards when we honor the best sativa, best indica, best hybrid, best concentrate, and best edibles of the LA medical cannabis scene. Plus, we present the High Times Lifetime Achievement Award to marijuana superstar Tommy Chong. Come to the City of the Angels on February 16th and 17th for a High Times cannabis celebration. Go to MedCanCup.com for details. Live the high life. Be proud of who you are. Be part of the growing cannabis community. The High Times Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam is recognized as the world's premier marijuana competition. Over the years, thousands of judges have attended the Cannabis Cup, sampling the best indicas, best sativas, best hybrids, and the best hash on the planet. In the April 2013 issue of High Times, read all about the sensational 25th Cannabis Cup that took place in November. Find out about the latest killer strains. Decide what to grow in your garden this year. Celebrate 25 years of the Cannabis Cup in this very special issue of High Times Magazine. On sale now.
Now it's time for your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, February 12, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Senate panel okays destroying medical marijuana. This from the Arizona YumaSun.com. Ignoring a threatened lawsuit, a Senate panel voted Monday to let police destroy marijuana they have seized, even if it was taken wrongfully from a medical marijuana patient. SB 1414 is designed to address situations where police come into custody of marijuana and later learn that the person was a medical marijuana patient and allowed to have it. Under the law as it has been interpreted by the State Court of Appeals, police are now required to give it back. Senator Kimberly Yee, Republican of Phoenix, said she believes that puts police in the position of violating the Federal Controlled Substances Act, which continues to make marijuana illegal. Her legislation would let officers destroy the drugs once any investigation was completed, even if the person was entitled to have them in the first place. Bill would ensure medical marijuana users can receive organ transplants from the East Brunswick, New Jersey patch. New legislation in New Jersey, which would enable medical marijuana users to get transplants, seeks to prevent repeat of controversial cases at a California hospital. The measure, A-765, was prompted by a California case in which a medical marijuana user was denied an organ transplant. While some doctors have raised concerns about the potential effects of marijuana for transplant recipients, others have said marijuana has been found to be medically necessary and shouldn't be a barrier to transplant. The bill is receiving support from advocates for medical marijuana. Roseanne Scotty, New Jersey State Director of the Drug Policy Alliance, said patients using medical marijuana should receive equal treatment. The marijuana use policies of some of the state's organ transplant centers were not immediately available. In at least one case, use of the drug shouldn't be an issue. At the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey's University Hospital in Newark, marijuana use does not block patients from receiving liver transplants. Marijuana decriminalization effort fails. This from Wish TV in Indiana. The effort to decriminalize marijuana has failed in the General Assembly. The marijuana bill called for making the possession of small amounts of marijuana a misdemeanor. Committee Chairman Mike Young won't permit a public hearing on it. It's dead for this year, he said. The hopes of marijuana smokers lie in the shifting public opinions regarding marijuana use, reflected in the recent Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey. It found 53% in favor of decriminalization and just 41% opposed. Medical marijuana boosters rally at the North Carolina legislature from the San Francisco Gate. The head of North Carolina's Democratic Party says the Republican-controlled state legislature should give a bill to legalize medical marijuana an honest up-and-down vote. Democratic Party Chair Randy Voller spoke Tuesday to about 200 people who rallied at the legislative building in Raleigh for support of making North Carolina the first southern state to legalize the possession and use of small amounts of pot with a doctor's prescription. The Enact Medical Cannabis Act was filed by two Democratic lawmakers last week. A passed marijuana legalization bill died in committee without ever coming to the floor for a vote. Supporters of the measure cited results from a January survey by Public Policy Polling that found 58% of North Carolinians support legalizing marijuana for medicinal use. They also pointed to estimates suggesting the state could earn as much as $250 million a year from sales taxes and licensing fees on marijuana dispensaries. Vacaville, California, police find baby alligator during marijuana arrest, from the Contra Costa Times. Vacaville police encountered a baby alligator when they searched the home of a Fairfield couple suspected of possessing marijuana for sale. The married couple, Lori Riley, age 34, and William Riley, age 37, had 50 pounds of processed marijuana with a street value of $250,000 and a handgun in their possession when they were arrested. The couple was taken back to their Fairfield home where a search was conducted. Officers found additional marijuana, 7 firearms, including a 50-caliber bolt-action rifle, more than $29,000 in cash, and a 3-foot-long baby alligator. The alligator was turned over to Solano County Humane Services. Vacaville officers got warrants to search 2 Vallejo homes where they found indoor marijuana grows, totaling 900 plants. That's your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, February 12th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at one of our own, Georgia mom for marijuana, Sharon Ravert, and her appearance on TV. It's going to be a good video. Plus, highlights of quotes from Gil Kerlikowske, our drug czar, speaking to the Canadian magazine Maclean's. This is the Russ Belville Show on 420 Radio. We'll be right back after this.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Well, tonight, Fox Carolina investigates. We're talking about the push to legalize marijuana. You've probably heard all the talk about that. Well, supporters say their efforts are working because voters in Colorado and in Washington state recently approved measures to legalize and regulate pot. Well, one of the groups rallying around legalization are moms. The organization called Moms for Marijuana has members in North and South Carolina and in Georgia.
That's right. They say it is a time to have a conversation about pot. We're talking about it tonight, that's for sure. And they also say it is time to legalize it, but not for the reasons you might think. Fox Carolina's Derek Dellinger explains.
Cannabis, marijuana, pot, whatever you call it, merely having it could get you in serious trouble. But the messages that people see,
here, if you want a good smoke, try one of these,
can be seen by many as either laughable or just over the top. But this is what many think of when they think of pot.
When I was growing up, you were way more concerned about your parents or your preacher finding out that you had smoked marijuana than you would have been the police.
Sharon Ravert is a North Georgia mother who's part of Moms for Marijuana and Normal. Both organizations are tied to marijuana legalization.
If prohibition worked, by all means, you know, I would be all for it. But it hasn't worked, and it won't work. And we can't arrest our way out of this.
Ravert says marijuana needs to be legalized because she believes the war on the drug has long been over. She tells us the stigma of a possession of marijuana arrest is more damaging than the actual use of the drug. And she says the numbers speak for themselves. Marijuana has been illegal in the United States since 1937. But even the federal government's own studies show over 17 million Americans are regular marijuana users, more than any other illegal drug combined, with rates growing among children as young as 12.
We know that it's an addictive substance. We know that there's harm associated with taking marijuana, that it impacts an adolescent's brain in a horrible way.
Adam Brickner is with the Phoenix Center in Greenville. It specializes in drug addiction treatment. He believes marijuana shouldn't be legalized and says keeping it from children is the biggest reason why. He sees about 100 adolescents coming for treatment every year because of chronic marijuana use.
They're smoking a lot of marijuana by the time they're coming to us. We don't usually see somebody who's smoking once a week or so.
And there's evidence to back up his claims, too. A study done last year by the University of Oregon found that adolescents that were chronic marijuana users had an 8-point drop in their IQ. They also found the effects were non-reversible heading into adulthood. And this is where marijuana advocates and their opposition meet.
We do not advocate the use of marijuana, especially for young people. That is the main reason we do this, is because we want to protect our young people from drugs and marijuana specifically and get it out of our schools and in the back, you know, playgrounds.
Both sides say marijuana use will likely never stop. The solution that each side has to combating the use among teens is different. One side recommends keeping marijuana illegal.
My concern is that if it becomes legal, when it becomes legalized, more adolescents will engage in the behavior, and more people will have lifelong problems associated with that.
The other says pot should be regulated like alcohol.
If my kid has a marijuana cigarette in their bedroom and I find it, you can rest assured I'm not going to be happy, and I'm going to deal with it. But I don't want the police to come in my house and pull my kid out of bed and search her room to find it.
Despite efforts to legalize marijuana, legislators in South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia aren't taking up marijuana measures anytime soon. But both sides of the debate say this is a conversation that is long overdue. No matter what anyone thinks of marijuana, they say it's high time to talk. And that conversation is getting louder. Derek Dellinger, Fox Carolina News Tonight.
All right. And obviously, this is an issue that a lot of people are talking about. And people really on both sides of this thing, they either feel very, very strongly, hey, if you legalize marijuana, maybe it takes away some of the
usage will go up. Right.
That takes away the money factor. Some people believe you do it. Some people say, no way. Why would you ever legalize it? So really interesting to hear the different viewpoints on it, though.
Right. But for now, as Derek said, legislators are not taking up the issue, at least not yet. Hey,
let's hear it for our own Georgia Mom for Marijuana, Sharon Ravert. Been a guest on this show many times, and we'll be heading out there to Georgia for the Southern Cannabis Reform Conference taking place next month, March 15th and 16th in Atlanta, Georgia. I will be there. We'll be bringing you live streaming coverage from the conference, and of course, we'll be hanging out with Sharon and all the great people there with Georgia Care, Peachtree Normal, Georgia Moms, all the groups that'll be there. Make sure you tune in. Now, real briefly, we have just about a minute here to talk about the drugs are weighing in on Canada's pot habit. The story is up at McLean's, and I'll cover this more in depth a little bit in the Radical Rant, and also we'll take it into hour two. But there's one quote I definitely wanted to focus on. It came toward the end of the question and answer session with our drugs are Gil Kolakowski, and the question was, you are also working on a Northwest strategy for the border with Canada. Is more marijuana grown there? And Gil Kolakowski's answer is, that was the fact a few years ago, but now the U.S. is doing a great job of producing its own marijuana. Well, thank you, Drug Czar.
Yes, we are doing a great job of producing our own marijuana here in America. It used to be BC Bud was what you were looking for when you wanted to get something fine. But now, here in the great Pacific Northwest, in the great Emerald Triangle of Northern California, in the backwoods of Kentucky and Tennessee, and all over America, in closets and in basements and in attics and in garages and in hidden places all over the place, we are growing the best marijuana in the world. The question now is, why do we continue to let that be an untaxed market? Why do we continue to let the Mexican cartels control a large degree of it when they're murdering killers that they are? Why don't we turn this into an industry that benefits America with tax revenue? That's what we need to do. And kudos to Sharon. Wasn't that cool?
It was great seeing her up there. So, yeah, definitely. Big up, George Bump.
Belleville Bump, baby. We'll be right back.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Great. Drugs make me strong. Drugs make me smart. Drugs make me feel good. Drugs make me cool.
You believe that crap? Huh? You believe all that stuff they're handing you about drugs? You want to believe in something? How about yourself? Don't do drugs.
Fun, fun, fun.
Mm. Don't let him die, Fox.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, that's right. Yeah. Just like that, baby. Don't stop. I like it. You like it, baby? Yeah. Feels good, right?
Big Daddy thinks.
Funky, rollery.
Don't let him down.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belleville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Electric Tuesday, featuring the latest in electronic dance music and other cutting-edge genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, folks, before we get to the tune today, just a few quick little announcements. I got an email from our good friend Terry Joyce, the Hollywood Hemptress, who is now a part of Atomic Comedy Network, Atomic Comedy Radio, and she's got a new rebranded Hollywood Hemptress Hour that looks great. I got to find out what she's using for green screen, because her green screen stuff looks awesome. So I am looking forward to perhaps in the beginning of April. Every 3 months, I've decided that it would be a good time for us to introduce new lineup, new shows, and so forth. So every season, we'll have, you know, kind of like a, you know, any network would have, you know, seasons where you bring on new shows. So coming at the top of April, maybe even sooner than that, we're going to add Terry Joyce and the Hollywood Hemptress Hour back into the network lineup. There's a few other shows out there that I'm interested in as well. The Chong and Chong Show, the podcast with Adam Akadosius and Manny Blunts is out there. Professionals Against Prohibition is another show that'd be interested in getting back on the network. So few others. So we're going to take a look at that, see if we can't get more voices here on 420 Radio. Now, speaking of today's tune, this is a perfect example of another issue that we need to work out here on 420 Radio, and that is more crowdsourcing. For a long time, every day on the old Russ Belleville Show and the old Normal Show Live, each Daily Toker Tunes was handled by a music editor. And we still have that somewhat to this day. I'm still handling the Roots Monday Daily Toker tunes because I'm doing the Viper Hour. And Red Eyes is handling the Wednesday tunes because he's doing the flashback. And then Herb handles the Friday tunes because he's doing the Rockin' Friday. He's doing the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. We need someone for Tuesdays and Thursdays. Now, that's two different jobs. So we need someone who would be interested in being a Tuesday music editor and calling in once a week on Tuesdays, just like Herb does, calling in with your introduction of the song, the DJ, the whatever, the sample, whatever it is these days, and providing a song for us. So if you're interested in that, we're interested in having you be a part of the Russ Belville Show. Likewise, we need something for Thursdays as well, for the Groovin' Thursdays, rap, hip-hop, R&B, and soul. Now, the only catch of all of this is that the music you find has to be pod safe music. That means you can't just go get, you know, the latest hit songs. You have to go to things like IOTA PromoNet and SoundCloud and GarageBand and, you know, places like that and find unsigned artists and new music. But it's a lot of fun. You can find all sorts of great music. It's a once a week thing. And it's something you can do to feel like, you know, you're contributing to the voice of the marijuana nation, contributing to activism in some small way by helping entertain and spread music by relatively unknown artists. If you're interested, go to 420 Radio, go to our sign up form there, our contact form, look for the Radical Russ link, and just send me an email if you're interested in Tuesday or Thursday music editor position. In the meantime, we're going to go back to the Terra Lumina album, the album all about science, and their opening track. This one's called Return to the Sky.
To comprehend thought that we are not alone on this planet we call home. Water flows with ease, making rivers, oceans, lakes, and streams. Over time it can erode, help all things on earth to grow. And water's part of all living things, both great and small. Any creature you can see, it's water just like you and me. From the sky above our heads to the earth beneath our feet, over rocky river beds into the sea. Flowing through our bodies and within our every cell, absorbing heat, ascending to the sky from which it fell. Return to the sky, evaporate and rise. Bring life down to us all, precipitate and fall.
Hi, this is Dan Michaels. If you're looking for professional voice talent for your commercial or podcast, I'm your man. Visit Dan Michaels.
Who would you rather your kids talk to about drugs? You? Or some guy? When your kids find out you've been lying to them about marijuana, who will they trust? Let's have a rational discussion about drug reform. Let's tax and regulate marijuana, restrict youth access, and create safer communities.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. It's 31 after the hour, and joining us today by telephone, we have got Jay Selthoffner from Wisconsin on the line. Jay, are you able to hear me okay?
Yep, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you online just fine. Thanks for being here on the show today. And kind of last-minute notice, you sent me a note about something really important going on. And I'm like, well, you know, I could tell people, but you could probably tell them better. So here we are. Tell folks what's going on in Wisconsin.
Well, there's actually lots of things going on in Wisconsin. Most importantly, people are actually talking about marijuana reform again. Not just people, but our legislators are. Activists are, and like I said, everybody really across the state is talking about it.
So let's start with the legislature. What are they doing in the legislature?
Say again?
I said, let's start with the legislature. What's going on in the Wisconsin legislature?
Well, our past two, I guess, heroes, if you want to call it, Mark Pocan and Jabba Erpenbach, they had consistently sponsored legislation at the state level. They moved on to the federal level or congressional seats. So we had elections in November that saw a new crop of legislators come in. So we are very excited to see a new lead sponsor on the medical marijuana end of it. And we do expect a medical marijuana legislation to be active again for our 2013-14 session. And along with that, we are seeing more and more Republican support in the field, and we're having a few Republican legislators come out of the closet and starting to be vocal and support marijuana reform.
That's excellent. Do you think that has a lot to do with Washington and Colorado legalizing?
I think it opened the door, yeah, opened the conversation. You know, just like when I first became an activist, just me standing out in front of the doctor's office, you know, with a doctor that I know having a sign, enabled him to start having conversations with his colleagues. I think states moving forward allow the conversations to progress. But yeah, instead of just talking about medical marijuana, those two states have opened up a whole bag of conversation, from job creation to possible tax revenue to, you know, just pure savings on law enforcement ends. And
those are all things that are talked about every day in the legislation.
Well, you know, speaking of, you know, all the people in Wisconsin that are talking about this, not just the legislature, but the people are talking about it. And you guys have a forum going on in Oshkosh, bagosh. So that's happening tomorrow. Tell us all about it.
Well, I was contacted by the Fox Valley ACLU, or American Civil Liberties Union, and in conjunction with the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh, a professor, they really wanted to put an expert panel to bring up across the cross aspects of marijuana reform and what it would mean to a state if they would legalize it. And specifically, since we are in Wisconsin, what it would mean to, you know, to Wisconsin to legalize marijuana. So really, as the continuing on with the public awareness campaign, we're seeing more and more organizations get involved. And this is one of those events that was really not spearheaded by a marijuana reform organization, but it is on the topic of marijuana reform, and that happening by itself is monumental.
Do you have any recent polls showing how the public feels about marijuana issues?
And we've had, you know, some general polls. I believe the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which is our state's largest paper, did have a rather detailed conversation. Basically, there were several letters to the editor going in, and then they opened up a day to an online conversation and threw up a poll after that. I haven't checked it in the last maybe month or so, but I think it was a total legalization poll, and I think it was polling at 63% in favor of total legalization. On the medical end, we had, overwhelmingly, when the news polls go up on the website, this and that, we see tremendous support. But we actually had two referendums in 2010 in Wisconsin. We are a non-binding, non-ballot initiative state, but we had two referendums, one in Dane County, which passed with like 73%, and one in the city of River Falls, which was like 63%. So all the public polling that is at least recognizable has indicated that the support is there.
All right. Well, we are speaking with Jay Selhoffner. He's the co-founder of Northern Wisconsin Normal. And if you're interested in more information, check out NorthernWINormal.org. It's up on the screen if you want to link in and check it out. And, you know, thinking of Northern Wisconsin, I think that, okay, you're right there next to Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And when I have stories about medical marijuana out of Michigan, it's usually from, you know, the Mitten side and not so much the UP. So has that been an effect? Has there been an effect in Northern Wisconsin from the medical marijuana that's legal just across the border to the north?
Yeah, it pulled me away. I'm actually a resident of Michigan and a caregiver in Michigan also. So I figured I was fighting so hard here in Wisconsin to do this that it's only 2 hours away. So yeah, I run into people every day, every walk of life, and in specific, the real estate agents who are telling me, you know what, probably 2 to 3 out of every house that I sell nowadays is actually to someone who's coming up to the UP to be a medical patient. They call them refugees, you know, both the caregivers and patients. They just refer to them as refugees. We're seeing them up there from Minnesota, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Wisconsin, you know, everywhere, the Midwest. I mean, Michigan is the only state that's really green in the Midwest. So with 300,000 people in that big landmass up in the UP, it is clearly evident that refugees are moving there specifically for the law, and it is impacting their economy in a positive basis.
Wow. You know, that's the same phenomenon that we've got, and we've described it before, between Idaho and Oregon. Of course, the largest population center in Idaho is Boise. It's just 50 miles away from the border, and there's a mass migration of Boiseans that are now living in Ontario, Oregon, just across the river. It's only a 1 hour commute to make it in, you know, so they just go ahead and they live out there in Oregon where they can be legal. But, you know, looking at the Wisconsin map, I don't see a whole lot of big population centers in the northern part. So where are these? Is there a lot of draw from the smaller cities, or is it mostly from the urban centers they're coming from?
No, you know, what I'm seeing right now is really the bona fide patient migration. Yeah, you know, in 2010, 2011, there was definitely, let me back that up, I guess more 2009, 2010. It was really looked like Wisconsin was going to be the next medical state, you know. And then we had the Walker recall election, some bipartisan things where time just flew by and a lot of people weren't really paying attention. But the law, you know, didn't change again. So I'm seeing a lot of people who are chronically ill or disabled, who are on fixed income, who are just, you know, in those rural cities, Eagle River, Tambine, Niagara, you know, those towns under 1,000 people who are basically, you know what, instead of living my life here as a criminal, it's not really going to change if I move 30 minutes north as far as, you know, income-wise, because they're on a fixed income or ill, sure, or disabled or chronic. And it was technically a little bit cheaper with property taxes, and property values are cheaper in the Upper Peninsula, that a lot of people are just making the move for a sheer economic reason, and then the icing on the cake is the sheer medical reason, and then the icing on the cake is that it is actually more economical for them. It's actually cheaper to live in the UP. But Green Bay is only 45 minutes from Menominee. You know, so yeah, people commute 45 minutes in Wisconsin all the time. So as far as the big mecca or the draw, I run into a lot of folks from, you know, from Green Bay. But you got to remember, we have Milwaukee, too, that Milwaukee people are heading to the Lower Peninsula.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this is something that's going to happen on another scale with legalization in Washington state. We're already looking at Portland being right across the river from Vancouver. And of course, in Vancouver, the property rates, the rentals, the cost of living, everything is a lot cheaper over there. That's something that I think a lot of these, when they make these forecasts about the economic impacts of legalization or medical marijuana laws, that they don't take into account how it impacts the states around them.
No, no. And I mean, that's one thing that obviously you would think sometimes just applying a little bit of common sense to, you know, the application of legislation would happen. But we know that it doesn't always happen in our legislation process. But I think it is one of those things where a majority of your, you know, cannabis users or people who are really, really dedicated to that aren't really too open about it yet, you know. And I mean, we're running into people, like I said, even though the refugees that have moved, you know, when I'm talking to them and I'm asking them, I'm like, hey, you know, were you in contact with your elected official, you know, beforehand, before all this happened? And they were like, no, you know, no, I wasn't. And, you know, that's part of that process here yet, is that our communication on the field level, just as general constituents about this issue, is lacking. I mean, I'm sorry to say it. It is lacking.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, and get involved with your local orgs. That's why we have Northern Wisconsin Normal and Normal chapters all around the country, is to kind of get people involved in this, you know, the ACT part of activism.
Yep, that's just it. You got to put the ACT in activism. You got to take action.
So as far as action goes in Wisconsin, I know as far as events go, I think of Michigan and the Hash Bash. Madison has the Harvest Fest. What are some of the next things you're looking forward to on the calendar?
Well, if everybody knows, we actually have a Valentine's Day meeting. We meet on the second Thursday of every month. So we actually have a 420 fellowship hour where we get together as an informal group. The second Thursday of every month at the Harmony Cafe in Appleton. So it's always nice just to spend an hour of casual conversation talking about cannabis, and then we get together with our formal meeting. We do have our Madison chapter and our chapter also in Milwaukee, southeastern Wisconsin Normal. So, I mean, throughout the month, there's usually four or five regular meetings that are going on. We try to do a creative event every month, whether that's putting a booth on at an energy to expo or answers to energy expo, or maybe being, you know, having a table at the farm market. You know, we like to go where there's already a draw of people rather than trying to do those types of things. But obviously 420 is coming up. We lost a great mentor and friend and, you know, just a great individual in Ben Mazel a couple of years ago. So Madison did declare 420 official, April 20th, officially Ben Mazel Day, and all of the chapters are actually planning awareness for that particular day. March 7th, we will be tabling at the Slightly Stupid concert at the Rave in Milwaukee.
Excellent.
So, at Slightly Stupid, they're coming to the Rave, which is one of our largest concert venues in Milwaukee. So
yes,
Normal will be tabling there. So that'll be exciting.
Well, they've always been big friends to Reform and getting the Normal chapters out at their events.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and that's the thing that we need. We need the support from people who are already putting butts in the seats. You know, like I said, we as a chapter, we kind of talk about that, like, you know, let's get a Normal booth at maybe the county fair of the most known opposition here in Wisconsin, you know, that we really, really like to get out in the general public. Not, you know, not that having a cannabis-specific event isn't good or bad. I mean, it has its purpose, don't get me wrong. But sticking our nose in other people's business, it makes a lot of sense. You know, you just got that foot traffic. You're reaching a crowd that normally you may not reach. So,
yeah. Well, Jay, thank you for doing what you're doing. NorthernWINormal.org is the website. And keep up everything in Wisconsin. Make it legal for us so I can enjoy a Packers game and not have to worry.
Yeah, we'll have the Green Bud Packers pretty soon. So.
All right. Take it easy, man.
All right. Take care, Russ.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal.
Life ain't a box of chocolates gum. That's why people smoke weed and take bumps and drink way too damn much.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
All right, folks, you've seen the headlines out there, haven't you? Marijuana legalization passes in Colorado and Washington. New survey finds record majority support legalization of pot, and only 7% of the people think the U.S. is winning the war on drugs. Well, so has the drug czar, who is mandated by law to oppose any legalization of marijuana. Our good friend Gateway Gil Kerlikowski and his acolytes, Dr. Kevin Anslinger Sabet, Dr. Paul Chabot, Patrick Kennedy, and all those kinder, gentler drug warriors nationwide are forced into a strategic retreat by a new generation. Think about it. Some of the first graders, when California passed Prop 215 in November of 1996, will be getting their bachelor's degrees this May. They don't even remember a time when marijuana wasn't medicine. And now, it's recognized as a medicine in 18 states and the nation's capital. And their parents? Well, they've got Facebook and Google to dispel reefer madness in just a click. Even their grandparents are being enlightened to the remarkable benefits of cannabis for the health issues that seniors face by people like our good friend Robert Platshorn in the Silver Tour. Well, lately, these drug warriors have been popping up like Punxsutawney Phil, frightened of their own shadows and predicting six more decades of drug war. But this time, they're armed with a whole new set of talking points designed to reboot marijuana prohibition with a veneer of concern for addicts and children. So here they are, in no particular order of logical fallacy, half-truth, or misdirection, the top five new rhetorical tricks, talking points, or sound bites of the kinder, gentler drug warriors. Number five. We don't fight a war on drugs anymore. We're all about treatment and rehabilitation now. Kerlikowski actually said this to McLean's, quote, "My colleagues, prosecutors, police chiefs, sheriffs, never really talked about it as a war on drugs. They would use the term, you can't arrest your way out of this problem. The war on drugs is a good bumper sticker, but we know that the drug problem is unbelievably complex. There is no bumper sticker answer. We helped shift federal funding so that more money has flowed into drug treatment and prevention programs. We have tried using the bully pulpit of the White House to talk about the disease of addiction and to talk about it in a public health model." Well, look, when only 7% of the public buys your slogan, it's time to change slogans. But not necessarily tactics. Here's how this trick works. The drug warriors will break down their budget into categories: treatment and prevention, law enforcement, interdiction, and international. And when you see that on a bar chart, treatment and prevention and law enforcement look roughly equal. But the problem is that interdiction means law enforcement pulling weeds and seizing drugs. And international means money we give to law enforcement internationally. So when you pile all three of those law enforcement bars on top of each other, you'll find that the Obama administration's drug war budgets are a 3-to-2 ratio in favor of law enforcement spending over treatment and prevention spending. And in another trick, sometimes they'll say how much more they spend on treatment over their previous administrations. And that's true in overall dollars. But actually, George W. Bush's administrations had slightly more spending directed toward treatment and prevention as a share of the overall drug war. And if we can't arrest our way out of the problem, why do we keep arresting people? Number four. We can't legalize marijuana. Look at how many arrests there are for legal alcohol. Gil Kerlikowski to McLean's Today, quote, "We arrest about 2.4 million people in this country a year for alcohol. We arrest less than 700,000 people for marijuana, and for all drugs, only 1.3 million. Alcohol is perfectly legal. So making drugs available without any sanction would only lead to more abuse," end quote. This misdirection amuses me the most. Being arrested for a legal marijuana violation would somehow be worse than being arrested for an illegal marijuana crime? Yes, okay. About three times more people are arrested for alcohol violations. That's things like DUI, underage drinking, public intoxication, you know, that kind of stuff. Than for marijuana crimes, right? About three times more. But 51% of Americans age 12 and over use alcohol monthly, while only about 7% of Americans use marijuana monthly. So do the math. That's about seven times more Americans drink than smoke pot, but only three times more get arrested for it. And how many more alcohol arrests would there be if the mere smell of a beer or sight of a can enabled police to search and arrest you for possession of a mere sip? And remember, when the drug czar says abuse with respect to marijuana, that includes use. Will marijuana use increase after legalization? Well, sure, as some who feared the law might now give it a try. But there would need to be one new monthly adult pot smoker for every two existing monthly pot smokers to even approach the greatest rates of marijuana use this country has ever experienced back in 1979. And I know, sure, inflation was high and disco sucked, but that wasn't marijuana's fault. Maybe cocaine's fault. And if these new legal marijuana users are using it instead of booze, prescriptions, or illegal drugs for the same purpose, won't that be a net positive for public health? Especially if we're raising some new tax revenue along the way? But number three, we won't gain any benefit from taxing marijuana because taxing alcohol and tobacco is a net loss. Hyper drummer there. This is Kevin Sabet in a piece he wrote to CNN, quote, "Many have already begun touting tax revenues from legal marijuana as a major plus of the recently passed state laws. Sadly, however, we know that vice taxes rarely pay for themselves. The $40 billion we collect annually from high levels of tobacco and alcohol use in the U.S. are about a tenth of what those use levels cost us in terms of lost productivity, premature illnesses, accidents, and death," end quote. Yeah, this is a fun little piece of algebra I call the Sabet conjecture. Given that we take in roughly $20 billion in alcohol taxes and $20 billion in tobacco taxes, and we incur about $200 billion in costs from each of those legal substances, we should therefore continue to take zero in marijuana taxes, spend $7 billion futilely trying to eliminate marijuana, and incur whatever never-mentioned costs of current marijuana use we already pay. The problem with the Sabet conjecture is that alcohol and tobacco, unlike marijuana, say it with me, kids, are toxic and addictive. If you could line up all the drugs, legal and illegal, that are used recreationally in order of danger to user and society, alcohol and tobacco would be at the head of the line. Well, maybe sharing spots with heroin and PCP. Of course they cost more in public health, cirrhosis, lung cancer. Of course they cost more in workplace productivity, hangovers, smoke breaks. And of course they cost more in social costs, drunk drivers, cigarette butt litter. But according to a 2002 Canadian study, the social costs of marijuana users are 1/8 that of alcohol drinkers and 1/40 that of tobacco smokers. Whatever the cost, we're paying it now, taking in nothing in taxes and spending tax money to fight it while we enrich criminal gangs. Which leads me to number two. Legalizing marijuana won't do a thing to the Mexican cartels, and we must avoid a big marijuana at all costs. This is Kevin Sabet on CNN. Quote, "We also know that the promise of ending violent cartels is far from reality. A recent RAND report showed that Mexican drug trafficking groups only received a minority of their revenue from marijuana, so they're likely to stay around, legal marijuana or not." End quote. And Patrick Kennedy, speaking to MSNBC, quote, "It is going even further, and before we know it, we're going to wake up one day and have another tobacco industry. It's going to be called the marijuana industry. We already know what big tobacco did to our kids. Joe Camel targeted kids." End quote. Joe Camel? Would that be the scrotal-visaged cartoon advertisement we haven't seen since 1998? Who went the way of the Winston Cup? Smoking sections? And the Marlboro Man? Why is it when marijuana is legalized that we'd have to repeat all the same mistakes we made with the commercialization of tobacco? Why would we not learn our lessons from history and apply them to a newly emerging marijuana Because supporters of prohibition never learn from history. The tragic irony of Patrick Kennedy's comments is big marijuana already exists. However, it's not a bunch of corporations that settle their disputes with courts and lawsuits. Big marijuana is a bunch of violent Mexican narco-traficantes who settle their business with plata o plomo, a bribe or a bullet. A big marijuana that tortures and beheads and terrorizes our neighbor to the south and, according to that recent RAND report, Kevin Sabet, generates 15 to 26% of its revenue from marijuana. The question isn't whether we wake up to big marijuana, it's whether big marijuana is a tax-paying, job-creating American corporation that sells pot in adults-only stores that check ID, or is it benefiting criminals who use teens as their retailers and never check ID? Oh, and speaking of the children.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
That's right. Number one, we can't legalize marijuana because, well, what about the children? This is a quote from Patrick Kennedy in his letter to our Attorney General, Eric Holder. Quote, "Marijuana remains a leading reason kids are in treatment today." End quote. From the Project Sam website, quote, "Data from the National Institute on Drug Abuse found that in 1993, marijuana comprised approximately 8% of all treatment admissions, but by 2009, that number had increased to 18%, end quote. And, quote, "According to data from the 2012 National Survey on Drug Use and Health, National Survey of American Attitudes Toward Substance Abuse, alcohol and cigarettes were the most readily obtainable substances for youth age 12 to 17 to obtain, with 50% and 44% respectively reporting they could obtain them within a day. Youth were least likely to report they could get marijuana within a day, 31%. 45% said that they could be unable to get marijuana at all," end quote. Well, look. Nobody wants kids using marijuana, unless it's for medical purposes with a doctor's supervision. But these statistics distort reasonable concern over teen use into full-blown alarm that diverts resources from real teen drug problems. Over 17,500 kids were admitted to rehab with marijuana as their first or second substance of abuse, compared to 9,500 admitted for alcohol. However, 28% of kids drank last year and half as many smoked pot. So almost twice as many kids go to rehab for pot than booze, when twice as many drink than toke. A large part of the reason for that increase from 8% to 18% in treatment admissions over 30 years comes from doubling marijuana arrests and an increase from 19 drug courts in 93 to over 2,700 today. And as for access to the substance, 91% of all kids say they know someone at their school who sells weed, compared to 24% for prescriptions, 9% for cocaine, 6% for cigarettes, and 1% for alcohol.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You can get that full rant on my website, RadicalRuss.com, and all the talking points have hyperlinks to all the studies and the citations to prove the point. I'm Radical Russ for Brian the Red. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers. Smoke it and it goes down.